Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Oh, would you listen to that music? The Abroad in Japan podcast is upon us, and I am one of the hosts of the show. Not the most important host, but a host nonetheless. My name is Pete Donaldson. Welcome to the show. Chris is not here, unfortunately, so turn off now. If you read the title and that's not what you're into, fine. If you've just found out that Chris isn't here and that's not what you're into, if you're not into mate, that's absolutely fine. Chris is in deepest, darkest... I don't actually know where he is, to be honest. He's been uncontactable for a few days. He did chip off to an island with Joe the Anime Man and Natsuki. And I think he may very well be trying to establish his own country on a patch of land off the coast of Fukuoka, where everyone dresses in like dark T-shirts and gets the haircut like the bloke who invented Tesla and who made that face on Joe Rogan. In short, the podcast is, admittedly, a few hours later than usual, because I had to get some interviews together, and normal service will be resuming this Sunday, I do believe. And this podcast does feature myself talking to two people who I think can provide something a little bit different, a different perspective to what you usually hear on the Abroad in Japan podcast. They're not YouTubers, they're not English teachers, I don't think they started that way anyway. They're doing something a little bit different in Japan, and they're both weirdly quite close to each other in the nation's capital, Tokyo, even though they don't know each other. And they've both managed to get work in Japan without going down the usual kind of language school route because of their incredible talents. And I thought it'd be interesting to have a chat with two people I've followed on Twitter for quite a while. And they've got some really interesting origin stories. They've got some excellent perspectives and excellent origin stories. It's a There's a guy called Mark Pickering. He'll be our first interviewee, who is a wrestling commentator and a journalist. And Dan Olowitz, who is a J League, Japan League soccer journalist. Two talented men and amazing voices on their particular sporty discipline. And I think you're going to love these interviews. So, yeah, Chris will be back on Sunday. Do have a listen. Here's Mark Pickering, wrestling man. All right, here with Mark Pickering. How you doing, man?
Yeah, good, thanks. This is a great pleasure for me, Pete, to speak to you and to see you as well. Full audio and visual.
Yeah, I've not been to the hairdresser yet, Mark. So, unfortunately,
well,
I look like an absolute wreck.
Me, yeah, I'm due as well. I've got no excuse, though. They're fully open, yeah.
So, I must kind of, I guess, first introduce you. So, Mark, you are a commentator. You yep. are a wrestling sort of, you'd probably class yourself as a wrestling journalist, I suppose, out there in Shinjuku.
Sure, yeah. Freelance sports journalist and doing sports commentaries, mainly around professional wrestling here in Japan.
Mm. Okay, so how did you get into that? How did you even get to Japan, I suppose, to do this? Because I think most people around the world will be able to sort of figure out that you are Welsh. You have got a Welsh accent.
Yeah, I've retained it to a degree. Yeah, so I started out with a degree in sports journalism from Stafford University in Stoke. And from there, moved into a couple of different sports. I got connected with judo, of all things, actually. I had no background in judo. I started working for the British Federation, then the International Federation for 7 years. And they have a world tour, so every week I was in Kazakhstan, Mongolia, Cuba, all over the world, and came to the end of that job in February of 2020. But a few months before that, I was looking to come to Japan, obviously Tokyo Olympics, huge fan of Japan generally, like yourself. I wanted to try and learn the language and things. So that's always where I saw myself. I should have come here years earlier, but you know, everyone says the same.
And then you're too busy with judo and jet lag.
Yeah, kind of, which is a bad combination, believe me.
Yeah.
And from there, then after I left that job, then I was home in Wales, actually, last year. I got stuck there for 8 months when the world, you know, totally collapsed, everything broke down. Mm. And that was, you know, challenging time as a freelancer. I'm sure you can relate to a degree. Mm. But my goal was always to come back to Japan. Things started to open up in October of last year. So I came out here. I had some contacts in the kind of sports media landscape. And I started things off, a Scottish friend of mine, we did a commentary on kickboxing. And there was Tenshin Nasukawa. A couple of years ago, he fought Floyd Mayweather, you might remember.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that was a pretty big deal. That was in Osaka. It was on Halloween. And you know what Halloween is like here?
Yeah, pretty wild. I mean, I imagine they probably didn't drink Strong Zero in the street before their bout, but
everyone else did, though. It was just everyone else an absolute did. Sea of humanity around Dotonbori and everything. I remember the footage of you and Chris, you were passing on, I think, the Newcastle, the Hartlepool dialect to some local.
Yes, in America Mura.
Yeah. So I started off with the kickboxing commentary here. No real commentary experience, but one thing led to another, and then I got an invitation to cover pro wrestling, and I started off with Pro Wrestling Noah. They were founded in only 2000, but they've quite a rich history for 21 years. So a lot of companies here in the sports area now, they're trying to incorporate English commentary, and it was just one of those kind of right place, right time. Not a lot of people can come in. I had the residency status, so that's really how it all kicked off for me.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I guess you're in a situation where with Japanese wrestling companies, I mean, I don't know how much the listener base of Abroad in Japan knows about wrestling. Obviously, Japan is like the second biggest territory for wrestling and has been for like a century, effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the homelands of professional wrestling. I mean, some of the early matches, the likes of Ricky Dozan, the father of Japanese wrestling of the 50s and the 60s, they got 65 million viewers. It's one of the top shows still to this day. And you know the big shows yourself, the likes of Tokyo Dome, it can get up to 40,000 people, sometimes 60,000 people in different times, of course. There's a real, it's part of the Japanese culture, I think, the samurai, the fighting spirit. They see them as these larger in life characters, these representatives of the country against foreigners who come in. I think there's a good story there. There's a good aspect. And I think it's one of the sports, actually, during these difficult COVID times, that it's still managed to keep going. They've got all the protocols in place. And I think there is still that degree of fun, that degree of enjoyment.
Mm. How do kind of wrestling fans in Japan differ to the usual kind of WWE sort of fans in the big domes, in the big stadiums in America?
Yeah, it's a lot more respectful, quieter audience. They're really putting everything through their mind as they see it. There's the clapping, a lot of respect. But of course, for the higher up the card, the more famous wrestlers, the more famous fighters, they get into it. There's cheers, there's chants, there's sometimes tears in the crowd. And of course, there's very different age groups. You know, you see a lot of young women, you'll see a lot of old men, couples, all different sectors. You know, I've seen people who've come straight from a judo club, for example. They're wearing their full judo kit and they burst into Kruachan Hall in the main event and all different stories. And there's these great characters, you know, that you see here.
Yeah, I guess if you see someone with a judo kind of get up in the crowd, you think something's going to happen. There's going to be a run-in at some point. They're going to run in the ring and start fighting.
Yeah, that's where I'll move my seat somewhere else at that point.
Well, I think my own experience of wrestling in Japan was at Kurikan Hall, and it was the Best of the Super Juniors, Sean, Tiger Mask, or whichever Tiger Mask we're up to now, and a few others. I think Taka was wrestling as well.
Taka Michinoku, was it?
Yeah. And a very sweary intro. That you probably wouldn't hear in Western Western wrestling shows. Taka is coming, motherfucker! Yeah, and it's wow, this is a family. This should be a family audience kind of situation.
You see the five foreign fans in the crowd look at each other like, "Is that okay?
Said the F word." So, do you, as a wrestling kind of commentator, do you kind of how do you kind of like set up for a match? How much research do you have to do on the writers? How much kind of Japanese do you know?
Yeah, it's basic level conversational Japanese, to be honest. I've been down the route of putting up the hiragana, the katakana, the kanji characters in the shower. I'm fully on board with your idea there of the video aid in the shower. When that happens, let me know. I'll get on the Patreon for that. Look,
I have been trying to make that happen for such a long time. I even contacted like a Chinese e-ink provider and they were very unhelpful because I'm not a computer programmer. Yeah, if I was, I'd be way more well off, Mark.
You need to crowdfunding, that's what you need.
Yeah, damn right, yeah.
Yeah, but so, yeah, so I kind of prepare like any general sports event. So say 2 weeks before for the show, you get the full list of matches, maybe 7 to 8 matches. Then I would look into, say, if it's an opening singles match, I would look into the backstory. How many times did they face before? Who won? And then arguably the most difficult aspect is, say you've got 40 wrestlers on a card, they've each got probably 20 different techniques. And even if they have the same technique, it'll have a different name. So you're talking about hundreds of techniques here. And it's just trying to process this. Yeah, so I've got notes upon notes of like 15 pages because I always just want to be more prepared than... You know, I'm not going to use them, but it's just as a reference point. Sometimes I'll be scrambling, looking through my notes. What was that? And then it was already on to the next move, and then it's a pinfall. And, you know, you just try and keep track of everything. Yeah, I find it's probably more labor intensive to prepare than for kickboxing or, you know, for grappling or martial art, really.
Yeah. So each individual wrestler will have a different version or a different, say they do, I don't know, an Irish whip or something. That will be called different. That'll be called a different thing for each character, effectively. So
they like to put their own spin on it, their own name on it. So for one wrestler, it's one thing. For one wrestler, it's another thing. And my co-commentator from Scotland, he comes from more of a martial arts background. So relies on me to an extent to come up with the terminology. So I'm trying to study that and to try and get everything in, but it is challenging. Yeah,
very, very, very hard work. What are the wrestlers? Do you get to speak to many wrestlers one on one? What are they like? Are they quite normal out of the ring?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we introduced to them in the first show we did back in November, and it was you know, very cordial, very respectful. They were bowing to us and little conversations here and there, a little bit into their backgrounds. But they struck up a good conversation. All made big effort to try and speak English, a good rapport. Really approachable, but it's unbelievable the difference. As soon as that light switch turns on, they're totally different characters, as you can imagine.
Amazing.
The most dastardly heel, the biggest villain, is the absolute nicest guy outside the ring. It's like, is that the guy I was talking to earlier? How can it be the same guy? As he's just cursing everyone in the crowd, cursing all his opponents. An hour ago, he was bowing to me.
yeah, really respectful. Wow. Yeah. How does kind of the wrestler's lifestyle kind of fit in with the rest of Japan? Because obviously, like, we have this very kind of blinkered view about what a salaryman does, what an office worker does and stuff. But I can't imagine we have that much of scope as to how a wrestler builds his day effectively. It's the working out, it's the consuming. Like, gyms aren't few and far between, but they're, you know, they're very different to American gyms. They're not quite as prevalent. They're not quite as ubiquitous as everywhere else.
Sure. So it revolves around the tour. They'd be working probably 200 to 300 days a year. And they tend to travel by bus. So they'll be doing 9-hour long bus journeys all over Japan to make various dates. Then it revolves, as you say, around the gym, probably maybe tanning on the sunbeds, and then the media appearances, and then maybe some downtime that, you know, they're always on the road, so they're always eating out, maybe a little bit of drinking, a little bit of socializing aspect as well to keep the rapport up and stuff. But yeah, it's very intense lifestyle, I think.
Do they have that thing where in the 70s when the American wrestlers used to go over to Japan, and did Dozan run a company? Either way, they had two buses, one heel bus and one face bus, one goody bus and one baddie bus. Because if you are a casual wrestling observer, so to speak, to use a phrase, you see a good guy and a bad guy hanging out at a bar, it's not a good look.
Yeah, they don't really tend to do that now. I mean, I guess the equivalent for... maybe some people, especially in the UK, be like Dirty Den from EastEnders, you know, with the nicest, sweetest character, and that wouldn't really work with it. But I don't think they have the facilities or maybe the revenue streams for two buses these days, to be honest, you know, in these times.
Yeah, and I guess people are kind of cognizant of the fact that it is just a job at the end of the day.
It's very relaxed now around venues. Mm. There's fans taking pictures with good guys and bad guys. They're all interacting, and it's very, you know, relaxed over the years, I think, here now.
Yeah. What's this year been like? I suppose it's been very abnormal in that there are no tourists in Japan. I guess you found it quite hard to re-enter Japan this year. What's it been like?
Yeah, it's quite surreal. I mean, yesterday I went to Tokyo Station. They got the big countdown clock for the Olympics, Tokyo countdown clock, because it was 100 days to go on Wednesday. So I thought, let's go take a little look down there, take some pictures, because I hope to be working at the Olympics this year. But it was raining. It was a bit of a damp squib. There was nobody around. There was just a few hopeful international photographers looking for the right shot, but there was nothing going on, you know. And it's the same, you know, in wrestling venues, especially in January, it's usually packed up with foreigners, thousands of foreigners here, a little bit like WrestleMania weekend in the USA. Everyone comes out, they go to all the shows, maybe two shows in a day, three shows in a day, they just can't get enough, and then they go to the wrestling bars, the wrestling restaurants, and it's like a totally jam-packed holiday they tend to come for in January. But of course, that's just not a thing here now. And the crowds as well, in most sports, they're not allowed to make any noise at all. It might be different outside some parts of Tokyo, but they can't make any noise at all, so all they can do is clap. And then sometimes we're coming in for commentary in the main event with a big booming voice, and, you know, it's echoing around these big venues.
Oh, wow, yes, everyone can hear you.
Yeah, which is a little bit embarrassing,
I bet. And I've seen sort of some small band venues, they don't allow people to scream or shout, but they do allow rubber chickens in to sort of squawk away. So people bring in rubber chickens and they just squeeze them instead of cheering and shouting. Can you see sort of a way out for Japan? Like, obviously you're out and about and experiencing it. Can you see, obviously the vaccinations haven't really sort of hit pace yet in the country. Yeah. Can you see a way out for sport when it comes to being a kind of international global spectator sport?
I mean, you know, it is impressive the measures that they are taking to allow sports to currently take place. Yeah. For example, you go in, you have to write your details on the ticket, your address, your contact information, you get a temperature check, they spray your hands with a liquid. And then they might ask you some questions about where you've been interacting. It's a socially distanced crowd. You're not allowed to speak. You're not allowed to chat to people and everything else. But I think it's just going to take time. It's all about the vaccination. It's just going to be a slow route to that, unfortunately, here in Japan. Mm. They're talking about teenagers maybe at the start of next year even. But I think the way things are now, I think the Olympics are going ahead 99% in my opinion now, because they see it as 10,000, 11,000 athletes will come in, but they will be literally in their own little bubble, in their own little world.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be cut off from Tokyo Japanese society, so they can't see any mixing. Of course, you know, Olympics, these things happen, there's scandals, people break the rules. But as far as they're concerned, I think that's 100% happening. But hopefully, you know, cases here can stabilize by that point. At the moment, they're just on a steady incline, unfortunately. But, you know, it's all going to be about that vaccine.
Indeed. Well, I mean, look, we've talked about wrestling, we've talked about vaccines and, coronavirus pandemic. Obviously, the main question that I think we're all waiting to hear from you, Mark, is what's your favourite product in a 7-Eleven? Because that's kind of... We do talk about the Kombini quite a lot on Roger.
Yeah, I did spend a couple of minutes staring quite intensely at a chocolate coolish flavour last night in the 7-Eleven.
Oh, hello, Mark. Yeah, yes, please. Yeah, yeah. They keep on getting closer. Somebody found some coolish or a coolish variant. I think it's still made by Lotte. It was kind of like a Kalpis flavoured, which is excellent, coolish, that was not branded as coolish, same company, in Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
They are getting closer, Mark.
Wow, okay.
That's almost FedExable for
me. That's almost halfway. That's got to be halfway, right?
I know, right? Oh, yeah. My word. I
have to say as well, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm one of those people on Twitter who's took a picture of Coolish and sent it to you.
I
know that comes up with Chris on the podcast. I had the guy at a station and there was this giant Coolish billboard. I thought, right, I have to stop and take a picture.
Well, Mark, where can people find you on Twitter and where can people find your work mainly?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter @_MarkPickering. If anyone wants to ask about anything martial arts related, sports, pro wrestling, maybe in the future when planes are a thing again, if they want to come out to your practice a martial art, go to watch a wrestling, a combat sport, anything like that, feel free to send me a message if they want any questions, any advice, no problem. And the next commentary I'll be doing will be on the 29th of March for Pro Wrestling NOAH. Keiji Muto, one of the most famous Japanese wrestlers, will be defending his heavyweight title. So that's next up for me in 2 weeks. Between now and then, I've got almost half a book I probably have to write in notes to try and get through that one.
Oh, no. Well, I'll leave you to that, Mark. Thank you very much for joining us, mate.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. You take care, Pete.
All right, then. Thank you to Mark for coming on. Lovely. Hasn't he got a great voice? Hasn't he got a great accent? Right, we'll be back after this with my chat with Dan Olowitz, the J-League expert.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan. Welcome back to the Abroad in Japan podcast. Pete Donaldson with you. And as promised, here's my chat with Dan Olowitz, a journalist and J-League expert. If you want to know more about Japan League soccer, he's your man. All right, we're here with Dan. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
You've just been showing me your scarves offline. You have an astonishing array of the most obscure football scarves, J-League and beyond, that I've ever seen in my life, Dan. That's incredible.
It is. It started out, when did it start? I guess about a decade ago, maybe a bit more. And I was never a uniform guy, because in Japan, you don't really wear your kits out and about.
Right, okay.
And
yeah.
So I started picking up scarves, because of course it gets cold in winter and here, even in Tokyo, and I started picking them up, and one led to another, and that led to about 300 or 400 more. And it's a sad addiction that I'm working on. Yeah, working on storage so that I can keep, you know, so I can find a place for all of them, so I can keep buying more of them. So, you know, it's a process.
I mean, I guess you could kind of just cover one entire wall, pretend it's some kind of wallpapering, or maybe stitch it into some kind of mat system and carpet your whole house with scarves.
The goal is to one day be able to own a pub, and then I'll have room for all of, just cover the entire place. No smoking, of course.
No, you don't want to ruin those fibers.
No, absolutely not.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started. I'm fairly certain, due to your accent, you're not native Japanese, but you've been here for a little while doing football.
I'm American. I'm born and raised in Philadelphia. I played football, as you know, as a kid, basically through junior high. I never followed it professionally. I did back in those days. We're talking the late 90s, early aughts. You couldn't watch club football. You couldn't watch the European game. Right. We didn't have MLS in Philadelphia. So I was, you know, just one of the legion of once every 4 year fans who would watch the World Cup and then promptly forget it existed. I did my third year of college in Tokyo through Temple University. And I went to my first international game, Japan, Bahrain in 2005. And then a year later, I graduated, and then I moved back to Tokyo. And then that spring, I went to my first J-League game, FC Tokyo against Kashima Antlers. And
nice.
I was 21 years old, no clue what I was doing. I was just like, wow, all these people behind the goal look like they're having fun. And I just ended up there, and I stayed there. And that started everything. And I just kept going to games, bought season tickets, started a blog, started my Twitter account, just kept writing about Tokyo and then the J-League in general. And then eventually that somehow turned into writing about it for a living. And so I've worked for a variety of football news sites, mostly Japanese, a couple Western outlets. I started at goal.com. And a couple years ago, I joined the Japan Times as our head football writer. And that's basically what I've been doing ever since.
Awesome stuff. Well, I mean, thanks for giving us your time, because I imagine as head football writer, you don't really have that much time off. I mean, what was it like kind of like transitioning from like just writing about one club and being obsessed with one club to kind of like broadening out? Because in the West, we have a very sort of rigid kind of like newsroom system when it comes to writing about sport and writing about football.
I think when it comes to the J-League, all of us, because back in this era, everyone had a blog, everyone had their specific team that they wrote about, and we all sort of had our shared, you know, forums and that sort of thing, and now sort of everyone's on Twitter. And we're all passionate about our clubs, but we're also all passionate about the league in general, about Japanese football. We're all advocates. We're all trying to get people to pay attention because all of us think that it's a really cool league. Japanese football has so many wonderful stories. The atmospheres, the, you know, just the level of play is incredibly high compared to Europe. It's not, you know, top four, top five territory, but it's pretty there. You know, it's pretty close. I think Japan and the J League, you know, they can go toe to toe with Holland, Belgium, Portugal. I mean, you've seen this in international competitions like the Club World Cup, 5 years ago, when Kashima got to the final and took Real Madrid to extra time.
Yeah.
You know, the football is very good and there's a lot of amazing stories, but it's also a league that is growing and developing, and all of us are trying to help that. For people like me, I guess it initially meant, you know, taking pot shots at the J League through Twitter, and now it means sitting down with the chairman for an hour and just talking shop. And it's, you know, I've definitely matured since my early bomb throwing days. I still try to keep a bit of that in me, but you know, trying to change the system from the inside is another way of going about things.
Definitely. I think certainly in the West, and certainly from the perspective of someone who helps run a football podcast in London, I mean, the main stories are from Japan and J-League. I mean, it's King Kazoo, it's Iniesta, it's stories that kind of break through. And from my own perspective of sort of going to see I think one singular match, confirmed for a Kofu. Weirdly, when I was going to try and see FC Tokyo, I got on the wrong train, ended up 3 hours outside of Tokyo, and ended up, and it just so happened at a town that actually had a J-League team, and then my kind of casual love affair with that team was kind of born. Have you kind of noticed a sea change when it comes to the actual personnel in the J League? Are there more homegrown players kind of coming through? Is it still one of those leagues that you just sort of see these journeyman Brazilian footballers who historically always travel incredibly well and always tear up the league? Are you kind of finding a sea change when it comes to homegrown Japanese and other nations kind of coming over?
I think that sea change has been around for a while. I think if you look at the J League was founded in the first season was in 93. And yes, back then there were a ton of Brazilian players, European talent, and it was a journeyman's league. It was sort of a retirement league. And then around, I'd say about 2005, 2010, in that period, that was when you started to see the shift of Japanese players going to Europe on a regular basis. It was really the 2010 World Cup that spurred that on. You think about how many players from that squad use that World Cup to springboard to Europe. Yuto Nagatomo being a big one, Shinji Okazaki being another big one. And, you know, that was the tournament that made Keisuke Honda a household name. That was, could have been the tournament that made Shinji Kagawa a household name, but he didn't get selected. That's another story entirely. But then over the last decade, you're seeing, you know, it used to be that you turn 24, 25 and you go to Europe. Now you're a teenager and you can be sent on loan or you can be sold at 19, 20. And so you're seeing all these really amazing players making the leap at a very young age. And they're starting to really catch up in terms of development compared to their European counterparts. Not there yet. There's still a lot of kinks to be worked out. And there is a mentality issue when it comes to playing on the bigger stage. And you see that in inconsistent play from Takumi Minamino, for example, or like Shoya Nakajima, who didn't really do too well at Porto, or Takefusa Kubo, who's, you know, Real Madrid signed him and then they've been sending him around on loan. So it's a process, but the fact that these players are so young and are still attracting so much interest from European clubs is proof that Japan is developing really good players, really young players, and they're developing a lot of them. As far as the foreigners are concerned, over the last 10 years, we have seen a lot of diversification in terms of who clubs are signing. You do have a lot of Brazilians coming in, and that's because those pipelines are still very robust. because there's a lot of agents and intermediaries and that sort of thing. But you have a ton of Korean players coming in. You have a lot of sort of overlooked players from Europe who have come in and made somewhat of an impact.
Peter Yataka. Love that guy.
Peter, that was what I was about to bring into. We have about half a dozen African players coming in this season because Michael Olunga won the MVP last year, and all of a sudden all the clubs are like, oh wow, maybe we should be paying attention to Africa.
Yeah.
And there, you know, you look at Chanatip and Tirithon and what the Thai players have done for the J-League's image. The J-League is as well known in Thailand as the Premier League. They have amazing exposure because those players are playing in what Thais consider to be a top tier competition, and they're doing really well. So the league is becoming more international, and it isn't just about Iniesta or Torres or Villa. And, you know, those are, yes, those get the headlines, but they're a very small piece of what's going on.
And I guess this year, more than any other, it's quite important to sort of remember that J League and, you know, Japanese sport in general have retained crowds. Obviously, they've not been hit quite as badly as everywhere else with the pandemic, but they have maintained they have maintained J League as a spectator sport, and that shouldn't be undervalued in 2021.
No, not at all. The league has done an incredible job of handling the pandemic. Yes, a lot of clubs are struggling. I mean, a lot of clubs are struggling financially. They took some very heavy hits. But the fact that since July, we've had crowds. It started with a cap at 5,000, went up to eventually 50%, and now we're somewhere between 5,000 and 50%, depending on where in Japan you are and what COVID countermeasures are in place, and if it's a state of emergency or the new not quite state of emergency measures. So it's not perfect, and we don't have cheering. There isn't the cheering, there isn't the singing, there isn't the flag waving, but the fans are there. They're clapping, they're still supporting the team, they're still holding up their signs. You know, it's better than nothing, and it has forced the clubs to really become very innovative in a lot of what they're doing in terms of business, in terms of coming up with new revenue streams, in terms of merch development, in terms of how they're working with sponsors. So I'm not going to come out and say that COVID has been a positive for the J-League. Obviously, we're still suffering a very heavy cost, but the league is responding as well as we could hope. And that's a pretty good win under these circumstances.
And in the West, I suppose, with a lot of leagues around the world, you can't see decent highlight packages online. But the J-League, and certainly J-League English service for us English speakers who don't know any Japanese, it's a bit of a godsend. It's really sort of quite comprehensive in their reports and how they sort of display the goals and the highlight packages and stuff like that. We talk obviously about on the podcast Abroad in Japan where the best places to go in Japan are. It's not we barely ever talk about anything sporty. But what is your favorite part of Japan? Obviously, you travel a lot with work, but what's your favorite part?
Man, I wish I traveled a lot with work. I mean, if we're going to sort of narrow it down, there's so many stadiums that I haven't been to that I wish I could go to. I mean, I've covered most of the Kansai area. I've, of course, covered almost all of the greater Tokyo area. And I've been to a couple other grounds here and there. In terms of my favorites, you know, you can't beat, if you're in the Tokyo area, you can't beat Saitama Stadium. Just the spectacle, as much as a lot of us love to hate Urawa Reds, that stadium, a full house, if it's an Urawa home game or Japan's national team, there's just nothing like it. I've gone to so many games, and not just as a writer, but of course, if you're there as a photographer, you go pitch side. I need to bring earplugs with me when I go to an Urawa game, because you're right in front of the main supporter section, and they are so loud. I also love the smaller rounds. I love Kashiwa Stadium, NAC 5 in Omiya. the best in terms of scenery. You just can't beat Nihon Daira, where Shimizu S-Pulse play.
Right.
It's a great looking stadium. And then you turn around and you see Mount Fuji.
Mm.
And it's, you know, no better setting. And, you know, you mentioned Kofu earlier. I've been to a game out there. Yeah, the game itself was a bit of a nothing burger, but you know, just you're standing on the pitch and you look and just mountains all around you. You can just
beautiful.
See, you can just see forever, and I love it. And they did a very cool special uniform last year where I think you see like it's like Kofu, but it's like from above, and it's a very right. cool shot. And I love stuff like that. There's just so many grounds like that in Japan. And the great thing about ground hopping in Japan is that you don't just get the stadium experience. It's not like in the US where you drive to the stadium and then you drive home, which I imagine is sort of the same in England and even in Germany and other cities in Europe, or other countries in Europe, I should say. But you go and you get on the train and you go and you can do sightseeing and you can check out whatever the local food is, and everyone goes to the restaurant and you look and you're in town and you see all the other fans of your club who are, they have their uniforms on or they have the scarves or the, you know, the keychains. It's a very cool experience. And that is more than anything what we're missing during this pandemic, is that you don't have fans who are going out and traveling. And that's part of the J-League experience, and it's what makes it so great. The fact that you can, you're not just ground hopping, but you're traveling.
Yes, yes. And I think coming home from Kofu with a big punnet of these kind of fake grapes, they're obsessed with the grapes they sell around there. It's very, very exciting. how do kind of like the crowds differ from Western sports kind of attendees? I sort of noted like a little bit more kind of subdued at certain times, a lot more clapping, but the supporters areas are quite interesting, flag waving, and they sing the songs, and they're all very organized.
The level of organization sort of depends on from club to club, and so does the level of enthusiasm, but you do, they start singing at kickoff and they don't stop until the final whistle. And
incredible.
It is. And it is, we have our complaints sometimes, you know. It's, I think a lot of European fans who watch the J League are like, oh, well, you know, they just keep singing even after they give up a goal, or, you know, they stay on the same song forever and ever and they never switch things up. And yeah, but it's such a colorful atmosphere. Everyone's got the uniform on, just all the flags and the bunting and the color, like they're just the color and the spectacle of it. And that's not necessarily something you'll get in England. You know, you're not going to have everyone wearing the uniform to the ground.
No,
it's not something you're going to get in the US, where like kids will come to the stadium wearing whatever soccer uniform they have.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, some clubs, I mean, Urawa is probably the closest you'll get to Dutch or German style ultras culture, just in terms of how well they're organized and how loud they are. I mean, they've got one of the best active support setups in the league. Them, Matsumoto Yamaga, who also played a beautiful stadium. You know, other clubs, again, it just sort of depends on who's running things. But the atmosphere is wonderful to play in. I was asked very recently, you know, why would a foreign player come to Japan and play in the J League? Like, are they getting a lot of money or what? I'm like, not necessarily, but when you're playing in a stadium like that versus, you know, a 2/3 empty stadium somewhere in Qatar, like, I know what I'm going to pick if I'm a player. Like, you want to play where there's an atmosphere, where there's vibes, where there's excitement, and you get that at every level in the J League.
Yeah, and also, I guess, like, quality of life as well. Look, I mean, we're talking about frequently about players who make millions of pounds rather than just thousands of pounds. But, you know, I think the biggest kind of, like, most expensive players in, like, J1 are on under $1 million a year, aren't they? There's not that much money kicking around as, you know, when, you know, Gary Lineker or the proposed transfer of, like, Maradona, you know, when that kind of money was kicking around. Like, would it be fair to say that the quality of life is still quite important, is way higher than if you lived in, I don't know, Thailand or some of the other places that some players can kind of play, the Indian Premier League, for example, or stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're playing in India, if you're playing in China, if you're playing in Thailand, you're not necessarily going to bring the wife and kids to move in with you for a couple of years or however long you're there. But you have so many players, so many Brazilians, so many foreign players in Japan who bring the wife, they bring the kids, they start a family here, they buy a house. Iniesta's having the time of his life. Chanatip has his family here. Jay Bothroyd, former England international, has his family here, and they love it. It's a great place to raise a family, and it's a great place to live in. You can, even if you're playing, you know, outside of Tokyo, let's say, you know, in Kanagawa or Chiba or Saitama, you know, you're not that far away from Tokyo. You can have, you know, a quiet life in a nice place and live in a good school district or send your kid to private school, as the case may be. And you can go into the city when you want to have some fun. Or you can, you know, you can travel, you can explore. You know, there's so much to see in the country. So I don't blame players at all. I mean, the foreign talent, they're earning probably close to $1 million a year, maybe 1.5. Iniesta is obviously a big outlier. But if you're doing well in Japan, really, you could be doing much, much, much worse anywhere else, even if your paycheck is larger.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a lovely place to be. Actually, speaking of Jay Bothroyd, he was I think he had a weird Twitter conversation with Honda, Keisuke Honda's, obviously a man who, and I think Jay Bothroyd's got a point. Does he have outstanding warrants in Japan? He just seems to never want to come back to Japan to play. He's been away for such a long time.
Honda is such a weirdo. And
he wears two watches for crying out loud, and he needs to because he's never at home.
That's probably the most normal thing about him. Like, I get it. Like in before we had smartwatches, you need to keep track of what time it is everywhere. But Honda is Honda, and we all make fun of it. We all joke about it. But in the end, you got to sort of respect him for staying on brand. Whatever he thinks that brand is. And now he's in Azerbaijan and he's getting some lip service that he might make it to the Olympic team. So, you know, if he does that, then we're all the assholes. Like, I mean, you know, Honda is Honda. That's all that can really be said.
Dan, we have to wrap up the interview with a simple question. It's unalloyed. It's unequivocal. What is your favorite product in the conbini, in the 7-Eleven?
Ooh, 7-Eleven. So we're keeping it to 7-Eleven.
Okay. I mean, if you want to give us one product for each, or just one product from your favorite conbini, is it Sunkist to Lawson to?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Sunkist is out. I think they've been bought out. I mean, we used to be a Lawson house, and then when we moved a couple of years ago, there's sadly none within walking distance. So it's Family Mart or 7-Eleven. Yeah, it's tragic. Gosh, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, you know, anything in the, in the fried section by the front. You know, not anything, but
the hot spicy chicken.
Yeah, that's my go-to from Family Mart when I'm on the go. And I think I'll stick with that. You know, you can't go wrong with it. They had those crazy crispy chicken things that were on sale for like a week, and then they sold out. Which is really what happens. Never fall in love.
Edition.
You can't fall in love with anything at the conbini because it will be gone and you will never see it again. That is the tragedy of life in Japan. It is meant to teach us that all things are transient, nothing remains, and that you have to adapt to the fleetingness of life. And so... Combinis are just, you know, the karmic wheel. That is what, you know.
Paul Fun is like my dad who left me. He went to the shops ages ago, never came back. Dan, how can people find you on Twitter? Aishiteru Tokyo, isn't it?
Yep, that's the one, at Aishiteru Tokyo. All my writing is on the Japan Times, japantimes.com. or I think it's japantimes.co.jp, actually. I think they both probably work. But yes, in the sports section, I get out my column as close to weekly as I can and go to games and write about them. And always happy if there's something you want to know about the game, tweet at me and I try to answer.
Well, awesome stuff. Dan, thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, good luck with it. What's your next posting? What's your next match you're going to be going to?
Gosh, I don't know. I'm not going to anything this weekend, but next weekend, the Wii League, the new Women's League, will be starting its preseason. And I'm very bullish on that. I'm doing my best to give it as much exposure as I can. So I'm hoping to cover that. And I believe there will be a game between Urawa Reds and Mainavi Sendai. So I'm going to try to check that out. It's going to be an interesting league. We're still a long way from the season opening in September, but they've got a really good vision. The chairperson has lots of good ideas. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they get on.
Thanks again, Dan. I'm sure we'll speak again at some point. But yeah, good luck with the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So there we are. Thank you very much to our amazing guests, Mark Pickering and Dan Orlowitz. Go and check them out on Twitter. And remember, Chris, we'll be back this Sunday with your normal stuff, whatever that might be. But for now, wherever you might be, in there, out there, in there, I can't remember what Chris says. Out there in the big wide world, have a coolish. Bye-bye. See you Sunday.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.